Weekly Dose of Fat, show number 24 for Friday, October, I don't know, 2014?
From the planet Noomtron in the Fat Bike Galaxy, it's the Weekly Dose of Fat with your cosmonauts Sven and Gomez.
Welcome to the Weekly Dose of Fat. This is your Uncle Gomez. Asking the question, where is Sven Hammer?
Over here in the rear with a bottle of beer. And joining us in the studio today is J.K. Livin.
Hi.
And we have the dopest band in the land, Chris Daisy, and the Dose of Fat Band.
This show is sponsored by the surly long-sleeve merino wool jersey. It's like a warm, soft hug for Mr. Snuffleupagus. No matter what street, trail, or alley that you cycle, you can find good common-sense cycling doodads and thingamabobs at surlybikes.com.
Hey, we topped 14,000 likes on the Facebook last weekend.
According to Facebook, we're huge in Bangkok, Thailand. Hey, everybody, there's some fun facts. The population of Thailand is 63 million people, and blah, 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 blah.
They have thighs in Thailand? They have thighs
just
there.
Just a land full of thighs.
Yes.
Oh,
magic land.
So we've got one hell of a show on deck for this week.
Tell us what the good folks at home can look forward to on the show, JK.
Well, this week, we talked to mountain bike Hall of Famer and reigning U.S. National Fat Bike Champion, Mr. Ned Overend. Ah! And then right after that,
the lung.
You know, who really cares?
Who cares?
This show's all about Ned.
Deadly medley.
Pretty much.
What?
Or beer.
Yeah, there's always...
Beer.
We gotta get liquored up before we talk to it. Yeah. Not really liquored up, just more or less beerified.
Beerified.
So this week's beer is the Deschutes Brewing Mirror Pond Pale Ale out of that beautiful gem of the Pacific Northwest in the Three Sisters region of Oregon, Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, that's not on the coast, right? That's in the...
No, it's... Yeah. I know
my geography.
It's right on the dry side of the Cascades.
Yeah. And they make hops over there, I bet.
Yeah, you know those Oregonians, they got the beer thing going on. And this beer, we're going to pop these babies open. We're going to play a game.
We're going to play a game of popping open the beer. Your beer opening apparatus is faulty.
Wow.
I'm having trouble with, but okay, they really put these caps on well.
Well, the bottle is conditioned to keep your beer fresh and enhance the flavors.
Is that the kind of voodoo that you said? That
yeah, the bottle sorcery. I was like, how do you...
They don't condition the bottle. They condition the beer in the bottle.
They said the bottle...
Bottle conditioned. See? Right. It's the ED that lets you know it's happening in the bottle.
All right. I'm not that wise.
Reading. That's why we're on the radio.
Taking a note from Colin Ford, we're reading beer labels once again.
So, you know, after we taste this beer, we're gonna go around. We're going to start off with Sven. And we're going to give a one-word answer which describes the flavor. This is from BrewDogs on the Esquire channel. We're going to go around and we're going to say a word until you can't come up with a word, or you repeat a word and then you're out, and the grand champion will be the last person with that word. So
can they be made up words, or do they have to be real words?
Real words.
Real words.
Cheers with your
beers.
It's
not like hard. It's not like we're going to give you an electric shock when you can't come up with something.
Well, I took a big old mouthful of it, that's for sure. Well, it's certainly hoppy.
JK?
Yes, and it's very pale ale-y. I put two hyphens in there. That's not pale ale-y. It is pale ale-y.
Pale ale-y.
Pale hyphen ale hyphen Y.
Lee.
I want to say slightly sour. Ooh, that was two words.
Oh, yeah. It does have a tanginess to it.
Ooh, tangy.
Yes, it has a mouthfeel.
That's a one word. It is. All right. Mouthfeel.
Mouthfeel. Or another hyphen.
More on mouthfeel.
It's kind of mouthfeely-ish.
I'm going to go with...
Are you going to make something up now? Or I'm going to take
it out.
I'm going to take another swallow. Is there any more hints on the label?
But it's sideways. You have to cock your head.
I don't know. It's just good pale ale style beer. I don't really.
Said pale ale. The winner is J.K. Lemon, ladies and gentlemen, with the most answers ever. But he still wins.
What does he win? Wait a second. I buzzed him out twice before. He can't come back in the game.
So BrewDogs is a show where these two guys from Scotland come to America and brew beer in ridiculous places. I mean, they're like, made it on a train. I think they should come to Milwaukee and brew beer on fat bikes in the wintertime under a bridge with us and maybe somebody that knows what they're doing.
We just got a kegerator, so when they get it done, we can keep it cold.
And then and then that's at least two beers, two shows worth of beer, right?
First we'll brew it, and then we'll...
Entourage.
So that's a call out to the Brew Dog boys. Come to Milwaukee. Pretty much the best place to drink beer under a bridge, I can imagine.
Yeah. There's always a
bridge. Since we're given...
Sometimes there's 30 Santas under a bridge, which is...
The natural habitat of the Santa.
They just announced the Santa ride.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. It's actually in December this time. Yeah.
That makes more sense than being in like October or whatever it was last time.
Yeah. And there's a lot of carefully guarded language about being nice and... not getting too drunk and the bad Santa. Yeah.
Well, the thing about that is that's going to happen anyway. Sorry, folks. Santas live under bridges. They come out. If it's not snowing, I don't know how you can have a Santa ride. There was a year when it was snowing. It was so awesome. We were going down Cesar Chavez Drive. Or Chavez.
Yep.
Chavez, that guy. And all these Santa, everybody was out on the street. People were stopping cars. They're holding their cell phones out the window, taking pictures. Nobody was falling down at that point yet.
Were you there when 130 Santas got pulled over by the Milwaukee police downtown?
No.
Were you on that ride?
No.
I was on that ride. It was.
But the year before that, or maybe the year after that, the police met us at Great Lakes and escorted us in a parade-style format all the way to Kochanski's or wherever
that
we went.
And played through the Bluetooth, through their PA system, right. Played our music. And
stuff. Yeah, through the speaker system of the squads.
The police for a little while were like, our bike's bad. But then I think Mayor Tom Barrett, who was a big cycling advocate, said, bike's good.
Bike's good. You know, get the density of this place up. We're going to need more bikes. A lot of the places I go on the east side especially are getting so packed with housing and apartments that – you can't park down there anymore, so you might as well ride your bike.
Yeah, true.
You know, I'm trying to get us a bike corral in front of the old watering hole there.
Exactly.
Talk to Mr. Jim about that. We need a bike corral next to the, what do they call that, parklet? We don't need that.
Get Puck to weld some sort of, you know, like, what do the Maasai use? They use thorn bushes in a circle to protect them from the lions.
Yeah.
They can make some sort of thorny corral.
That'll stop the cement truck when I drive it through the parkland.
Just a glancing off.
Oh, my God, our beer segment like spilled into all kinds of other stuff.
Well, it's still good beer, though. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of Sierra Nevada's pale ale, but it's a little different. I think it's a good beer.
Yeah, it's not quite as bitter, I think. Mm-hmm. As that is, it's
the finish.
Can I change my answer? Sweet. No, I already said sour.
The finish is is not. The finish isn't as in your face as Sierra Nevada. It has nice nose.
A hoppy nose.
Is that actually a?
That's what's on the label. A distinct hop nose.
Oh, okay. So
we will be right back with the one and only Ned Overend right after this word from Texas Pete.
One taste and you'll agree, you can't find a more fresh, flavorful, first quality product than Texas Pete Hot Sauce. Texas Pete makes history with every batch. Try mixing Texas Pete with melted butter as a dipping sauce for your next order of shrimp, and you'll agree, nothing wakes up food like Texas Pete. TexasPete.com.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Without further ado, we welcome a man that needs no introduction to the Weekly Dose of Fat, Mr. Ned Overend.
Welcome to the show, Ned.
Howdy, guys. Good to be here.
Hey, so Ned, the last time we saw each other, we were sitting in the River's Edge Eatery up there in Cable, Wisconsin, and you had just won the U.S. National Fat Bike Championship at the Fat Bike Berkey. We talked to all the other racers up there, but we just kind of had a little conversation friendly, and we never really talked about the race and the tactics and what happened. Can you give us a little play-by-play how the race panned out from, the attacks and this and that?
Yeah, sure. You bet. And first of all, you know, that was racing in a field like that. I've raced in some smaller races in Colorado, and, where there's only been a handful of competitive guys, like Travis Brown and some of the other local riders who were strong here. So I've never been... I think we started with like 500 racers, and clearly there was an elite group of probably 15 guys who were in that main pack.
Right.
And so I wasn't sure what to expect. You know, I've heard several of those names, obviously, Jesse, and I know also that Jordan Wakely, I think Jesse Lalonde, but I know also that Jordan Wakely had several wins and maybe even considered like the dominant rider in the Midwest.
He's a lumberjack.
And
so.
He's much more, much more competitive than the Colorado series. You know, there are bigger races out there. Anyway, so the first part was kind of about feeling it out. And I think the pace was going pretty good up some of the longer hills in the first couple miles of the race. And that's when it kind of got down to 12 riders, I think, at that point. And then heading out to the turnaround, there were some guys who would throw in some attacks, both Jordan and Jesse, and they would surge, and then the group would catch up to them. But there wasn't several attacks, so that people were recovering and getting back on, essentially. It was kind of hard to tell how strong the riders were, whether everyone was just kind of playing a waiting game or whether a lot of those riders were only strong enough to kind of follow those attacks and not counter.
That's interesting, because I know from Jordan and from Jesse that they went out in that first half and they put the pedal to the metal and they wanted to kind of assert their local dominance on that elite group. And during that time, that first half of the race, one of the Alaskans, Jamie Stull, when I talked to him, he told me that they were talking about themselves. They're like, what's up with Ned? He's squirrely and all over the place because you were sliding and all over the place. So do you think that were you playing with those guys, or was that because it was a little harder conditions and you had shaved off all those knobs off your front tire?
Well, I wasn't playing with the guys, but it's interesting. I thought a bunch of guys were sliding around a little bit. I was kind of – part of that was that I was kind of trying to learn about the track, right, before I really started, hanging it out and attacking. I was trying to figure out where the traction was. I thought those conditions, well, first of all, I've done some fat bike racing, but not near as much as those other guys in that pack, right? Who are from, Minnesota and Wisconsin and Alaska.
Sure.
And the conditions that I've raced here locally are much different than out there. So, for instance, I got there Thursday night, rode the course, and it was fast and pretty predictable, good traction. On Friday, it was frozen rain, and it was almost unrideable. I mean, just going up the hill, it was like a half an inch of ice on the track.
Yeah,
it was. And then Saturday morning, it was pretty good traction, but hard to read because there was a couple inches of snow. It had been freshly packed. So I was kind of searching for traction on different parts of the course and kind of experimenting with how fast I could get around turns and stuff. So I was definitely sliding around a little bit up front. So I was trying to get comfortable with it.
Right on. So then after the turnaround at 00, Jordan and Jesse kind of sat up, and that's when you started attacking, right?
Yeah. I figured after the turnaround, there was too many guys in that lead group for me. I'm fitness is my strong point. And I don't have a lot of power at the end of the race. I don't have a lot of speed. So generally, I'm a pretty weak sprinter. So for sure, having that many guys still in the race was not a good situation for me. So once we got, you know, where I could kind of predict how long it would take to get to the finish, I wanted to kind of thin that pack out. So I started attacking. I mean, I figured it would get down to maybe three or four guys working in a group together, kind of drafting off each other. That was kind of my goal at the time. But when I attacked pretty hard, the pack started to come apart after repeated attacks. And there was some guys in that were going with me, but they didn't seem like they had enough strength to like pull through. And I think it was a hard course to draft on anyway.
Sure, it's not a road race.
Yeah, but there's so much turning and it's up and down, and you know, you carry different momentum down the hill than the other guys, so you know, gaps would open up just when the speed guys were going downhill. So it seemed to me, since guys weren't recognizing much of a group to pick me behind, that I would just try and solo and see where it went from there. And it's one reason I kept looking back, because it was a concerted chase, and it looked like those guys were just going to run me down. Then I probably would have sat up and ridden with the other guys in the break. But it didn't seem like they had an organized chase.
Yeah, both Jordan and Jesse said that they worked too hard on the first half of the race, and they couldn't answer the attacks. The Alaskans seemed to group together, and they protected one rider that ended up coming in third. So it was really an interesting tactical race.
Yeah, it's also too bad that Travis had some technical issues, because it would have been cool to see him be able to help out in that front of that group.
Could have been the Colorado group.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I expected Travis to be up there, and I'm not sure what happened with Travis. You know, I think he either started with too low a pressure in his tire, or the tire may have been leaking.
Yeah, he had some issues where he went flat, so he lost air during the race. So the
once you have to get up and put air in it, you can't. That pack was going too fast to kind of regain it. It had too much momentum.
So it looks like all indications are that the U.S. National Championship race will again be at the Fat Bike Berkey this year. No official announcement as of now, but I've been pestering them to make an official.
Amy.
I'm calling Amy.
Amy.
And they have a new race director. But will you be back this year to defend the crown?
Well, probably.
Okay.
It's interesting. I have a different situation with, you know, my job was specialized, say, compared to those other racers. Sure. Those other guys who are sponsored racers, I mean, you know, I was out there with other jobs and stuff like that. You know, for sure, they're gonna attempt to be at the most important race of the year. My job as specialized is not as a racer. It's in product development and sports marketing.
Sure.
But I'm in this fat bike advisory group, and those guys, you know, said, well, man, you know, on the high performance end of fat bikes, would love you to do some race. And so I looked at on the calendar, and you know, what are the biggest races that get the most press in the most important areas in the fat bike market? And clearly, that was the Berkey. I mean, it was obvious that was going to be a huge event. So, you know, we will be there. Specialized will definitely be there in some capacity. But since I'm not, my job at them is not to race, I don't have to commit to saying, yes, I will be there, right?
Sure.
Because, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, I trained all winter. I really keyed on that race. And my training went perfectly. I couldn't ask for, you know, a better training situation. The weather here in Durango was right. I could ride the road down in town. And I could drive 45 minutes to the ski area and practice on fat bike stuff. So that's a good combination of fat bike technique and working on like road bike fitness down here.
Well, from a fan standpoint,
it's a long way off. It's 4 months off, so that's a definite maybe.
Sure. From a from a fan standpoint, we'd love to see you race again. So in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. I read a little bit about you and Travis racing fatties in Colorado. I know there's quite a few series out there. Do you and Travis get out and ride much?
Yeah, you know, we don't. Travis and I are buddies, you know, and we're friends, and we run into each other and have a few beers downtown for sure. And we end up seeing each other at a lot of trail functions. You know, his wife is Mary Monroe, is the manager of Trails 2000. Which is our trails group. So I do a bunch of functions with them. And so I see Travis very often, but we do a lot of our training by ourselves, you know, and we both end up riding a lot of prototype equipment that we don't necessarily want the other guy to be sure. Taking too close a look at.
Understandable.
Sometimes we'll see each other on the trail, and if someone's riding something, they don't want the other guy to be taking too close a look at. We just have to keep going.
So, do you have any favorite Rocky Mountain fat bike races or festivals out that way that our listeners should put on their calendars?
Well, there's some interesting stuff going on. There is a the Fat Bike Summit, which was in, I think it was in Ogden last year.
Yep.
It's going to be in Jackson Hole this year.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that that's going to be a big deal because they have they have races there along with, all kinds of manufacturers and test bikes and stuff like that. So I think that's going to be a pretty interesting event. I've never actually been to Jackson Hole.
It's an awesome place.
All my racing and traveling. So, That sounds like it's
going to
be a cool event.
That's a great town.
Yep, definitely fun. As long as Dick Cheney's out of town.
Well, muchísimas gracias for joining us on the show, Ned. We really appreciate it. Honestly, the reason why we didn't ask you, why I didn't interview you after the race was I was kind of starstruck. So it's
I was sitting next to him having a beer.
From a Ned. Fan standpoint, I'm just I'm in heaven here. So thanks.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm excited to be part of this whole fat bike movement, you know, and I think at that race, you know, and afterwards at the restaurant and the award ceremony and stuff, you could tell that the vibe reminds me of the mountain bike, you know, a very core group of cyclists that are all about having fun, and they got a great attitude, and I'm excited to see the sport grow and continue to be part of it.
Oh, very cool. Very,
yeah, awesome. Well, thanks again, Ned. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
Take care now.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio. Radio.
Hi, this is Jordan Wakely. When I'm not winning races, I'm listening to Sven and Gomez on Fat Bike Radio.
This is your weekly dose of fat.
Welcome back to the radio program. This just in, if you haven't tried to go tubeless on your fatty, you probably should. Or maybe you shouldn't, according to Sven.
Well, my theory on that is if your wheels and tire combo doesn't set up easily, put a tube in there. You know, you can go through a lot of effort and a lot of trouble. There's a lot of good combos out there that do work well, though. So if you want to go tubeless, do a little research and find the ones that do it easily.
Yeah. And then get some rubber gloves and a big drop cloth and some beakers and a sealant injector and get ready for a mess that is just slappy.
You ever seen Jim do it? He doesn't get a drop on him.
Really? I'm going to come in here and I'm gonna learn the secret.
The secret of Jim is...
I'm probably just romantically thinking that these new carbon wheels, that this... The feeling that I'm getting of this ease of rolling over everything is probably due to the maybe 2 pounds of lightness, but I romantically think, it's tubeless.
It does have an effect on your ability to get traction on stuff that's uneven, and you can feel it. I definitely understand what you're saying because I've been rolling my trail bike for 2 years, tubeless about, and we just switched over my beach bike from Unholy Rolling Daryls to the Sarma rims we've had running around that Jim's been running on, and he set those up tubeless, 3 pound savings on that bike. And Big Fat Larry's tubeless, pretty cool. Yeah, I just don't know about running them at like 4 PSI. I hate to break a bead and spooge all over the place.
Yeah, the only thing about those Surly tires is they have all those mold sprues all the way around. All the way around.
That's because they're not officially tubeless compatible.
Right.
But they do work.
I wonder if that'll change. I wonder if they can go and put some spackle in that mold.
Well, you know, the same place that makes the now tubeless ready tires for another Q brand also makes them. So I'm sure they can do it.
Sure.
And why not? It doesn't really hurt anything.
So here's a question for you. All you Alaskan guys that y'all love tubeless is how can you run tubeless with a liquid sealant in the tire and not run hydros?
Not run liquid in your brakes.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good question. Did you dream of that last night?
Well, I just thought of that. It's like
he didn't even come up with that in the read-through, folks.
He didn't even have that in the read-through, but I just thought of that. Because we talked about, I'm going to bust the paradigm of everyone says, oh, you have to run mechanicals, don't run hydros. Well, I read on the internet, a guy responded.
Is your name Joe? The internet told me.
I don't often glean much knowledge from the internet, including my own stuff.
That's because we're the providers of said knowledge. Thank you.
Wow, that just got really
mad. Or said nonsense. But anyway, this guy said, all you guys are just mimicking each other and saying these things because that's the way it's always been. The reality for lower 48 people is the coldest it's ever been when I went for a ride.
Minus 73 in Montana.
No, it was minus eight.
The coldest it's ever been. Oh. But the coldest you've ever ridden in, minus 8. Yeah, minus 14 eight. Here. So,
and I know you've been running hydros for years.
I've never really run mechanical brakes. A couple of bikes I ride have them. But the main thing for me, aside from the fact that we don't ride in 40 below weather, and I really don't think that's an issue anyway, is that on our beach rides, they self-adjust. So if you're running the most common mechanical brake out there in an 18-mile ride on the beach, you run out of brakes because the sand wears everything down and they don't self-adjust. Yeah, you could get down there and twist it, but
well, what really made me look into it was we got the Borealis Echo test bike in, and Fixie Dave Nice had the levers set all the way inside.
Fixie Dave, not that nice last time I saw him.
Really?
No, he's very nice. I was trying to think.
Wow. Your face was dropped.
Yeah. No, he's an awesome guy. And Fixie Dave is, I mean.
We didn't say that in the read-through either.
Really? No, he is one of the nicest guys out there. Very nice.
So he set this test bike up with the levers all run all the way in so I could single finger brake with my index fingers, which leaves most of my hand attached to the grip. And with the better modulation of these new XT brakes, I think I go faster due to these brakes because I'm not panic braking. I'm just barely touching those brakes.
Your sphincter isn't gripping the seat because you're not slowing down when you should be.
Yeah. So I had, I threw a set of XT brakes on my, on my fatback, and I have them running single finger, index finger. I had to do a little monkeying around because I use those, what are those called? The thumbies, micro shift thumbies. So the ergonomics was a little bit of a challenge. I have to run my brakes a little bit further tilted down than I usually do. But
you're going
to
like that in the long run too, though, I think.
Yeah, it's always been an issue of dinging the top tube, right, if you wipe out. But
I've used a bunch of different hydros. I think the Shimano XTs are some of the nicest out there. Those new guides are pretty nice too, the Avid guide.
That's what I've heard.
But yeah, we've run Hazes and Maguras and Avids and all sorts of stuff. And I've been running the Maguras for quite a while, and I like them. They use mineral oil just like the Shimanos do. Mineral oil doesn't have any moisture gathering ability. I don't know how they'd freeze. They're good to 40 below by their spec.
We're going to find out this winter, and I'll keep track of how cold I get out there. But
aren't you going up to Alaska, Homer, or somewhere up that way?
Yeah, but I'm probably not going to bring that bike.
You probably just fly up there and borrow somebody's bike with Avids on it.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Yeah, my bike is just a lower 48 bike, man.
You know, Alaska's cold. It's hot down there in Australia. What's going on down that way?
So they're the Simpson Desert Bike Challenge.
Bart Simpson?
Not Bart Simpson. I think it's the Simpson Desert. I think it's Bruce. Everybody's name is Bruce down there.
Oi.
Oi. So I say it's the granddaddy of Aussie fat bike races, but it's really not a fat bike race. But they have something called bull dust down there that makes the wider tire just the thing to ride. And I've been following it a little bit here. It's actually running right now, started Tuesday and Saturday. And we're gonna have an interview with the winner and Wayne Chapman, the godfather of. What accent am I using?
All those people are originally from England or Scotland or Ireland anyway.
We are earthlings. So there are daily results you can check. There's a link. It's, you know, desertchallenge.org. It'll be in the show notes. Check it out. And
desertchallenge.org. The link is in the show notes for that. I understand that we've got something special.
We have a live report from the fatbike.com helicopter. Let me patch us in. We have Bruce. Bruce, can you hear us?
Oi! Oi!
Bruce! Bruce, give us a word from the Fat Bike Challenge.
I'm high up. I'm a little frightened. They're all bikes. Run around.
Can you tell us if they're actually rolling forward?
We're going the other direction. They're coming right for us. We're going a little too loud now.
We lost him. We lost the signal.
Sounds like Bruce.
Speaking of Bruce, here's my shout out to Bruce Matheson. What's up, bud?
Hey, Bruce. You're welcome to come on the show anytime.
In other Fat Links, we have an Amigo Award. He's been on the show. The Pacific Northwest Fat Tribe had a gathering out in Washington. You can read a report about that.
Sue sells seashells by the seashore.
He sells by the seashore. It looks awesome, man. And he always seen, now we're the Bruce Matheson of that gathering. Because he always invites me to go out there.
And you never go.
And I haven't gone yet. Never's a long time.
Right.
So someday, man, I'm going to go out there and then I'll have a report from that gathering.
Mm-hmm. I got an invite from some guys in Billings to go out there next spring. And guess what? I just happen to be going out there anyway. So it's like, yeah, I'll show up.
And then go from Billings to California to do the Lost Coast.
I'm going to go with Paul. Mr. Paul. Yeah, we might have to go through Canada. I got 3 months.
There you go.
Probably.
The Salsa blog is going to have fresh bloggage every day in Rocktober.
I don't know if they know how much work that is, because we have fresh bloggage every day for
sometimes
every year.
Twice a day, sometimes 3 times a day. But that's us.
Yeah.
You know, they're busy making.
They're more of a bike company than a smart ass guy on the radio company.
True that. So you can click on the ad right on the front page, and that will whisk you right to their culture page, or you can click the note in the show notes or either way.
And fresh from his DFL at the Urban Jungle Cross in Milwaukee, JK, how was that event?
Oh, that was rad. That was rad as hell. I just joined in on it because I wanted to play. Every time I'd go by that area down in Walker's Point, I'd be on the river trail and look over, and like the 10-year-old in me is just screaming, I want to go play in all of these like broken down buildings and stuff.
Yep.
And it was an opportunity to do it, and it was a fresh ass course.
Yeah, they did a good job. There's a Flickr photo set that I shot. I didn't actually race. JK with his DFL was the racer of the group there, but it was a really cool course and some just interesting scenery.
Course designed by Eric O'Gallagher,
who
the OG
stepped on a nail the day before and could not be at the event. But Mr. Chris Zito was the MC and race director.
Hashtag Zito.
Yes.
And
those are healing burps for you, Eric.
And Zito is working on a couple more. I know that he's working on one on the east side of Milwaukee. And we have one right down the road here on the Artery Trail we're working on for actual snow sometime in January, February timeframe.
Sven and hashtag Zito working to make Milwaukee
your urban bike culture. Your urban jungle cross, fat bike friendly, cyclocross, not specific races.
We're just trying to be
Get asses in saddles, like a
better Minneapolis. Oh, that's right. Email Gomez at fat-bike.com.
You know, it's funny talking to Zito. He doesn't so much say much about Minnesota anymore like he used to.
No.
And he's even cut Australia out of his conversation.
He's all about Milwaukee now because he knows.
Hashtag Zito.
Hashtag Zito.
Thanks again to Surly for sponsoring the radio portion of today's broadcast. Surly bikes are the perfect blend of the precious. And who really gives a flying beep?
That about wraps up the show for this week. Keep the rubber side down and roll fatties when you roll.
Hey, follow us on Instagram, hashtag fatbike.com.
Does Zito have a Instagram yet?
I don't know.
Hashtag Zito.
Adios, amigos.
Bye-bye.
Go ride your bike.
Or your mom. Breaking news. This just in. The Fat Bike Berkey has announced that the 2015 edition will be the U.S. National Championship. This is an unsanctioned race, but with the 750 participants, it will be the largest fat bike race in the world and a suitable venue for the National Fat Bike Championship. Keep your ears and eyes peeled for more information as we get it. See you next week.
You've been listening to Fat Bike Radio's weekly dose of fat. Find us on the web at fat-bike.com/radio. We'll see you next time.